Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 9, delivered on February 10, 2015. The title of this lecture is Risk and Return.
Today, Risk and Return. I've brought up this subject before, and again, I'm going to give you the old rule. The greater the non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. The greater the non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. Now, what this means in practice is that we face uncertainty in our business operations. We face uncertainty with respect to sales. We face uncertainty with respect to our costs. We face uncertainty with respect to the economy, the industry, and even uncertainty with respect to our own abilities. So we have to have ways to capture this risk that we face. Now, as far as risk is concerned, we can imagine a number of different ways that we could describe risk. Risk could be, for example, just a word like, or a phrase like, oh my God, or WTF. That's good for qualitative purposes, but for quantitative purposes, we would like to have something more measurable, especially so that we can compare different risks that we face or different choices we face in terms of the risk that we're going to bear. But we always, always have to recognize that with a greater expected return, we are going to face greater risk. And there is no such thing as a quick, easy, big expected return. Now, as far as risk measurements go, I've actually shown you a couple of ways that we can measure risk. One of those you remember, and I'll return to it in a little while, is one called beta. I showed you a company's stock information, and I showed you this one metric there that captures risk called beta. Now, remember that beta is pivots on two numbers, 0.0, which means that there is no non-diversifiable, there is no diversifiable, I should say, risk in the security. In other words, if you put that into a well-diversified portfolio, it is a riskless instrument. Traditionally, do you remember what the traditional one that I told you, what instrument security we use that has a beta of zero? T-bills. Now, interestingly enough, though, in more modern times, over especially the last 5 years or so, I've seen another instrument being used for the risk-free rate. It's a 10-year treasury note. God, I kind of understand why it's being used, but just keep in mind that a risk-free instrument would have a beta of zero. And then the pivot point is 1.0 for beta. That is the risk of the market portfolio. So every time I see any kind of a security and I look at its beta, I can see that beta on this spectrum between 0 and 1, sometimes a little below 0, sometimes well above 1. But I know that this is a way to measure the non-diversifiable risk of a security. by its beta. Another one that we sometimes use to measure risk. Anyone know another one that we use? I think I mentioned it. I'm not sure if I made too much about it. Interest rates. Interest rate on a credit card is much higher than the interest rate on a home loan. That reflects the greater risk that is faced by the lender in lending on an unsecured credit card versus lending on a secured asset-based security, that is, home loan. Your risk on your student loans, you get any student loans? Do you know what the interest rate is? Does anyone have a number? Yeah. 6%? I think it is in that range. Now, that's actually not a very high interest rate. There are two reasons for that. One is that, well, there are three reasons. One is that presumably you're going to make a lot of money on the investment in your education. So you'll have a better chance of paying it off. The second reason is that these loans are by the government. So in a sense, you are being underwritten by the government. Third is, if you don't pay on the loan, the government will use all of its resources to nail your ass to the wall. They will simply take the money away from you, whatever way they need to. So that, but an interest rate on something else, for example, like on a car, the car isn't too risky because a loan isn't too risky, because it's asset based. But it does lose value, especially as it goes off the lot. It loses a big pile of value, and then as the car is used, it loses value. So there's some risk even in that asset based instrument. Interest rates, other metrics of risk, are out there. Now, one that you were introduced to in your statistics class was the standard deviation. The standard deviation simply measures the amount of spread of the data or of the possible outcome. And we do this, standard deviation is actually used quite frequently in finance, in business. It's there, and it's a quick calculation, and it's worth it for us to do it. Let me show you a practical example using a standard deviation and making some assumptions which might or might not be great, but we're going to make them anyway. And this is actually, I didn't bring my sheet with me. I forgot to do it today. But this is going in my projection for my company for the arts festival season coming up, spring, summer, and early fall. And you don't do a single estimate. You say, okay, we set up the world so that there are different possible outcomes. And we're going to say the economy. And at the far ends, we can say great. Or sucks. And then we might also break out one that's a little bit less radical. Not good. It doesn't suck, but it's not good. And then we could say pretty good. And then we have kind of the middle ground, meh. Now, let's assign some symmetric probabilities here. There's a oh, let's say a 40% chance that the economy is just going to be, eh. And then there is a 20% chance that it's going to be pretty good, and a 20% chance that it's not going to be all that good. And then in the tails, there's a 10% chance that it's going to be a real winner, and there's a 10% chance that it's going to be a real bad season for me. Now, in the real world, if companies do these kinds of analyses, the five state is not that uncommon. Some of these econometric forecasters, they break it down into like 12 states, 20 possible states with probabilities. Notice that the probabilities have to add up to one. In other words, in the terminology of probability theory, we must exhaust the event space. But one way or the other. For my purposes, and I do this, and this is what I do, I break it down into a five state economy. Sometimes I do just three states. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at my sales here. Okay. Now, if the economy looks, is just, you know, ordinary, it's nothing spectacular, nothing really good, nothing bad, I'm probably going to pull in the art season this year about $10,000. If the economy is better, I'm probably going to do about $2,000 more. If it's not so good, I'll do about $2,000 less. If it really sucks, I'm probably going to do about, oh, let's say $5,000 more than the middle and about $5,000 less than the bottom. $5,000 less than the middle. Now, I know businesses that actually do this. I keep thinking, am I just being awfully geek about this? No, a lot of businesses where they've had business background, they've gotten their bachelor's degree, owners of business will do this. And even in large corporations in the back room, planning, they've got to do this kind of thing because you can't order inventory on the spot. You have to project what could happen and then prepare for that with your inventory orders, your employment levels, et cetera, and all that. So, the first thing that we're going to want to do is calculate the mean of this distribution by the Greek letter mu. And I'm sure you've seen this before, and you should already know the outcome. But if you don't know the outcome, we would do each probability times the event level. So it'd be 0.10 times 5,000. Plus 0.20 times 8,000 plus 0.40 times 10,000. I wish I'd brought my paper because I did all these calculations on them. Plus 0.20 times 12,000 plus 0.10 times 15,000. And you add those up. In other words, the mean, formulaically, is the sum across the event spaces from k equals 1 to n of the probability of event k times the cash flow of event k. That makes it look really fancy so that you can open up your notes and people will see, wow, Greek letters. Now, here's the thing. It's a symmetric distribution. That means you really don't have to do this calculation because the calculation will come out to be the middle value. Save yourself some work. The mean is $10,000. And it will always be that. In the one problems I give you, I'll give you symmetric distributions. So the mean will always come out to be the center. But that's not the end of the simplifications that we can do here. Great. Now we have another one. This is the one that's the money shot. the sigma, the standard deviation, which is the square root of the variance. To do that one, we are going to do the sum from k equals 1 to n of the probability of event k times each cash flow component minus the mean, quantity squared, and then we're going to take the square root of that whole sucker. Oh, and I've also turned it over. Do you want to zoom in or zoom out?
We need to know that for the test.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
the formula part is more, this is the kind of thing that you have in your notebook when you open it up at the finance singles bar. I mean, you got to have an edge somewhere, man, you know?
So, can we do the zoom?
You want to zoom on it?
Yeah.
Whoa, hurl. Okay. But really, the formula is not as important as just knowing how to do this. And there is a, this is, let me tell you, first of all, in mathematical terms, this is what we call a long-ass formula. The reason for that is that you are going to take the square root in this problem. Is that line as wavy as I do? Ooh, okay. Of, let's see, 0.10 times, let me make sure I'm staying on the page here, 5,000 minus the mean 10,000 quantity squared plus 0.20 times 8,000 minus the mean quantity squared plus 0.40 times the event 10,000 minus the mean 10,000 quantity squared plus 0.20 times 12,000, the event 12,000 minus the mean quantity squared plus 0.10 times 15,000 minus the mean quantity squared. You add all those up, and then you take the square root of that mother or that thing. And unless you're Rain Man, you'll probably make a mistake doing this. But I'm going to tell you, there's actually a really simple thing you can do that will reduce the level of this calculation by more than half. And I don't know if you were taught this when you took statistics or not, but I want you to notice something. First of all, do you see this center value, 10,000 minus 10,000? That's going to be zero, so that's not really there. Another thing, is there some reason that happened? Hey, that's kind of fun. Anyway, that value isn't there. But also notice this. 8,000 minus 10,000 squared is actually the same as 12,000 minus 10,000 squared. It's just a negative, but the square makes it go away. The same is true for this bottom value. The probability 0.10 times 5,000 minus 10,000 quantity squared is the same as 0.10 times 15,000 minus 10,000 squared. This is always going to happen. So in other words, if I just did these last two and then doubled it before I took the square root, I'd get the same answer as if I cranked out that whole long formula. Let me say that again. Make sure you know how to do this fast. If I take the top two values and just double it, I get the same answer as if I took all five of the values and added them up. Don't forget to double it before you take the square root. So in other words, I really don't have to do more than half this formula. I just have to do these last, the top two, and then double it add them up, double it, and then take my square root. And I'll get the same answer as if I had cranked the whole long calculation out. Now, if I do that, I'm going to get, and I strongly encourage you to try to do this with me, 0.1 times, I'm sorry, 0.2. Let me do 0.2. 0.2 times square root. First thing I'm going to do is double it. 0.1 times 12,000 minus 10,000 is 2,000 squared plus 0.2 times 15,000 minus 10,000 is 5,000 squared. Then I close my parentheses. My final answer is $3,286. So how is that? Trust me, if you're on an exam, this is a lifesaver. In a five-state, a seven-state, even a three-state. In a three-state, all you have to do is one calculation and double it. $3,286. Whoops. Make sure you get that number. If you get something else, it's probably because I did the calculation wrong. Now, obviously, if you've got an Excel spreadsheet, be careful about using the built-in function standard deviation, because that formula works on the assumption that the probabilities are all equal, which in real-life business, they're not, and they're certainly not here. So you do have to do the cranking calculation. Now, here's the upshot. Here's why we waste our time doing this. It has meaning. If we assume that our distribution is something like normal, in other words, like a bell curve, here's what we are actually finding out. Here's what we have found out. The first thing we found out is that as far as risk goes, the expected landing point is going to be the mean, the $10,000. The standard deviation comes into play like this. My company has about a 67% probability of having the sales lie between $10,000 minus one standard deviation and $10,000 plus one standard deviation. So in this case, I have a 67% chance of having my sales land between 67.14 and here, the whole number. We're in probabilities, so decimals really don't mean a whole lot. And $13,286. there's a 67% chance that my sales will land in there this year. That actually has meaning to me. Let's say that I know my costs. I can do pretty well on projecting costs. I know that my costs of doing these shows, paying the fees and the gas and all that kind of stuff, I know that I'm probably going to run about $5,000 in costs. What this tells me is that there is a 67% chance that I'll be okay here. I know that there's a 67% chance that I'm not going to end up going negative on this season. That's probability theory, that in under a normal distribution, 67% of the time, you will land within one standard deviation of the mean. That's not from business. That's a mathematical fact. It goes past our speculations, our theories, our business plans. It's just a mathematical reality. And that kind of gives me a good feeling in a way, because now I'm stepping out of subjectivity. And everything we do is so subjective, it seems like. But now I've got something that comes from science itself. If I've got my standard deviation where it is, I have a 67% chance of coming out clean this year. That's something to keep in mind. But it goes more than that, because I also know that with that standard deviation, from probability theory, not from business, not from speculation, but from something that is ancient, I know that 95% of the time, I'll land within two standard deviations of the mean. Again, this is from probability. This is from math, not from business. So in this case, I would do 10,000 minus 2 times, that's 3,286. What did you get? How much? Did I screw it up? Well, hell. That's why I had my sheet, so I couldn't make that mistake, and then I forgot my sheet, and sure enough, let me see that again. Just to make sure you're right and you're not messing with me. 0.2 times 2,000 squared plus 0.1 times 5,000 squared equals, times 2 equals, now take the square root of that answer. Well, spank me, Jesus. You're right. Shoot. I didn't say that. See, I was doing that. I did that wrong so that you would, I wanted to see if you would actually catch the right answer. Let me go back and fix this one. Those numbers did not look right. I remember doing them on my sheet, but so 10,000 minus 2569. 20, yeah, what was it? 7,431. Yeah, that looks more like it. That looks much more like what I had. I was thinking I wasn't that close to losing my shirt this year. And 12,569. So the actual ones for 67% probability, the band was from $7,431 up to $12,569. So you can see there's a, if my costs really are about $5,000 for this season, I got a 67% chance of being okay here. I'm not in a whole lot of trouble. Well, now let me take it out two standard deviations to see my 95% probability. And in that case, make sure I got everything right here. 10,000 minus 2 times 2569 is 4862. And then 10,000 plus 2 times 2569 is 15,130. So there's a 95% chance that my sales will fall between about 4862 and 15 and change. That actually is kind of comforting, though, because remember I said my costs are probably going to run about $5,000. Even at the 95% level of certainty, I am not going to take what we call an ass bath. Okay, I'm going to make it. I'm going to lose a little bit, but there's a 95% chance that it's not going to be a slaughterhouse for me this year. Do you follow the idea here? This is why these standard deviations are just a quick back of the envelope calculation. And what this also does is tell me something else. It tells me I probably want to try to make sure my costs don't hit 4,800. Shave a little cost here, shave a little cost there, because I've now got a flag that if I can keep my costs below about $4,800, I got a 95% chance of doing okay this season. You follow the idea here? It's sort of like a guiding light. You know, 95% chance that I'm going to be okay? Yeah, I'll find a way to come below $4,800 in costs if I can be 95% sure that I'm not going to get creamed this year. That's why we do this calculation. That's why the standard deviation is a simple measure, but it's actually pretty darn nice to have it in practice. Now, let me do one more here for you. Here's the one that is going to not come out so well for me, is that in probability theory, ...99% chance... that I'm going to fall within three standard deviations of the mean. I got a 99% chance that my sales will land in there somewhere. So what I would do in this case, I'd do 10,000 less three times 2569, and 10,000 plus 3 times 2569. Oh. Yeah. Okay. So in that case, I'm going to come out 2293 on the low end, and on the top end, 17707. Yep, can't say I'm 99% sure I won't get clawed down this year. Yeah, that's okay. Now, there are two ways that businesses use this method. They use it as their comfort zone. Well, I'm 95% sure that I'll make it. The other way they use it is how I described before. They see two standard deviations or three standard deviations as almost like their rule for where their costs have to fall. If I were to do it that way, and I was very risk averse. In other words, I want to be 99% sure I make it this year. I'm okay this year. I would actually set that 2293 as my goal for cost. Not going to spend more than that, because if I spend more than that, I'm not going to be 99% sure I'm okay. The danger in doing that is that you get into this bloody cost cutting that can actually hurt your whole sales line up here. If I cut my costs that much, I probably couldn't achieve this probability distribution. It'd probably be shifted down some. So you get a kind of a feedback loop. So, but one way or the other, in the way I use it, I'm going to tell myself, I can't be 99% sure I'm going to make it. I'm going to spend about $5,000, and boy, I could at 99% level, I could be way below $5,000, on how much I make this year. But what I can do is say, well, technically, to be 95% sure, I'd have to have my cost below 48.62. Yeah, I can do that. Without losing sales, I can make, that's not hard for me to cut my costs a little bit like that. And then I've got my 95% level of certainty that I'm going to make it this year without bleeding from my costs. So it's kind of like a back and forth. You use these markers to tell you where your comfort zone is. And then if you don't go overboard, you use the markers to move you so that you know you're in your comfort zone. But if you use them too much, you get into this nasty thing where you're saying, oh, I'll cut my call. I've got to be 99% sure. Well, in other words, your risk, you're trying to reduce your risk, but at the same time, by reducing your risk, by cutting your costs, you are actually increasing your risk. So sometimes cost cutting isn't a risk reduction method. It actually is a risk increasing method. And that's what we'll get into in the next lecture. But you've got an internship fair that you should go to. That's all I have for you. Go home.